start, and I'll deal with those questions. We'll talk about the sponsorship, and then we'll get on with the share. In terms of where you can get the sheets, so David Hochhauser, who is a very loyal, trusty, and reliable tech support from the OU Israel Center. So what he does is as follows. I send him the source sheets at the beginning of the week, usually by Sunday evening, Monday morning. He puts them up on a link on the OU calendar, the OU Israel calendar. The OU Israel calendar is very easy to find on the OU site. I'm happy to send you the link. Maybe David can put it up on the chat during the share. And if you just press on the date on the calendar for the share, any time from, let's say, Monday lunch onwards, then the Makorot are all there, and it says download the Makorot. There we are. Here it is. So Amy's put on the OU Israel calendar there. Thank you for that. So you can just press there. You can download the Makorot, and you'll have them in advance. So that's the easiest way to do it. I don't mind people emailing me, but when 30 people email me all for the sheets, you can understand it gets a little bit it gets a little bit time consuming. But you can get them from the there. Now, also, previous sources are still uploaded to calendars for previous weeks as well, and David puts up the recording of the share afterwards too. So by the video recording of the share, he also uploads the Makorot from the share. So one way or the other, you can always get them. If all of that fails, I usually put them up on my own website. And if all of that fails, then you can email me and let me have a message, and I'll send them to you. So that's how you get the Makorot. That's number one. Number two, the sponsorships for today's share. Three very special sponsorships, and we're very grateful for your sponsorship, and encourage you, please, to be in touch with Mrs. Spivak to make sure that those sponsorships, please God, keep coming in. Someone's just asked me to mute everybody, so I will do that. So that we can cut out everybody's breakfast munching, even though I'm sure it's delicious. But the sponsorships for today are the following. The shiur is sponsored today, Le'ilui Nishmas Rav Yaakov Ben Aryeh Yehuda Halevi, whose yahrzeit is on the 23rd of Elul, which is coming up next week. That's an anonymous sponsorship, so thank you very much for that. We have a second sponsorship from Donna and Stanley Dalnikov. Donna and Stanley, I don't know if you're on the shiur right now. Oh yes, I can see you, there you are. Hi. So Donna and Stanley are sponsoring the shiur very kindly to celebrate their golden wedding anniversary. And Stanley says he especially wishes to thank Donna for having put up with him for 50 wonderful years together. I'm sure that she can appreciate that too, and it's really lovely. I've missed seeing Stanley and Donna at the shiur on Wednesdays. We got to know Stanley and Donna because they're very close friends of my in-laws, my son's mother-in-law and father-in-law, and it really was a pleasure. It's one of the added bonuses of my son getting married that we got to meet Stanley and Donna as well. So mazel tov to you. Many more years of happiness, health, and good times together. Be'ezrat Hashem. And finally, the third sponsor of the shiur is Mrs. Rachel Steiner. Thank you, Mrs. Steiner, in memory of her mother-in-law, Freva Pnina Bas Yol Halevi, which is her 31st yahrzeit on the 9th of Elul. She writes here, she was an unforgettable, compassionate woman, famous for her generosity, profoundly affecting the lives of many. Even when she could barely walk, she got up early in the morning to pick up other senior citizens to keep the minion of young Israel of Parkchester going in the East Bronx. So wonderful that people are remembered for these lovely things. And thank you very much for the sponsorship. It should be a aliyah for the neshama, both of Freva Pnina Bas Yol Halevi and also Yaakov Ben Ari Yehuda Halevi. So lots of Levim today. Now, that brings us to the main part of the share, which is the topic. Now, let me recap. Last week we looked at the quite tricky issue of women's obligation in mitzvot. And we made the following basic suggestions from the sources. Number one, fundamentally men and women are equal in their obligation in mitzvot. The mitzvot are gender blind, and there were many sources that talked about that. There are, however, a small subset of mitzvot that women are exempted from. They are a number of positive time-bound mitzvot, such as tefillin, tzitzit, shema, shofar, lulav, sukkah, and omer. There are, however, many exceptions to the rule, and there are many positive time-bound mitzvot that women are obligated in. Simchas HaChag, and Pesach, and Korban Pesach, Matzah, etc. Then there are a few mitzvot which are not time-bound positive mitzvot that women are exempted from. Studying Torah, writing a Torah, Birkas Kohanim, Brit Milah on the child, Peru Ravu, etc. And then there are a couple of, three actually negative mitzvot that women are exempted from. We talked about that, cutting off the beard, cutting off the corners of the hair, and going on to a graveyard if they're a Kohen. So it was hard to actually work out whether the rules came first and the mitzvah consequences followed, or the minhagim came first and the traditions were very ancient and they tried to set the rules around them. We talked a bit about that last week. This week, I need to get into the, I think we'll have a really, we'll see some very unusual and fascinating sources we mentioned from today. So okay, women are exempted from a few mitzvot, but are they able to do them? Let's say they want to sit in a sukkah, they want to shake a lulav, they want to hear a shofar, they want to put on tefillin or tzitzit. Is there anything that stops them, specifically or generally, from volunteering to do those mitzvot? We never said that they were prohibitions. That women can't do these things. We just said that there was a small number of exemptions. And therefore, what I want to explore with you today is how that works, what the different sides of that are, and then taking it a stage further, let's say not only does a woman want to actually perform the mitzvah, but she wants to make a brocha on the mitzvah. Asher kiddushanu mitzvah itzav v'tzivanu. Is that okay or is that not okay? And we'll see there's a lot of strong feelings. By the time we get to the end of the shiur in about 50 minutes from now, we'll see some real, you know, bullets flying, if you like, halachically, between different poskim on these issues, which I think you'll really enjoy. Be'ezrat Hashem. So let's get on with it. Like I mentioned, usually if there is a glitch technically, please don't panic. I will probably come back within a few seconds. So that'll happen, and also I want to mention that hello to my mum and dad who are on the shiur. It's nice, it's always nice to see them. Let's move on. Now, let me share on the chat with you the sources. You'll see on the chat, by the way, that David has uploaded lots of useful things about how to get hold of the source sheets, but let me just put now on the chat the source sheet for today so that you have that mamash to hand. Excuse me, just for the very slight delay. I should be getting quicker at this, really, shouldn't I? Here we are, getting there. Fine. Okay, so, yeah, that should be going up right now. Yes, it says it's successfully loaded, shiur number 183. So I'm also going to share the screen with you, which is obviously the a good way for you to see it right now. And that should allow us to, without any further ado, get going with the material. Okay, great. Great. Okay, fine. Okay, let's launch in. So as I mentioned, we saw that there are this small handful of mitzvot that women are exempted from. There are four basic approaches as to whether women are allowed to take on these mitzvot. Okay? They are basically no. Women are not allowed to take on these mitzvot. That's the first approach. If the Torah exempts women, that means that women are not allowed to do it. They should not sit in the sukkah, they should not take a lulav. We'll see, that's obviously not the halakha, but that's one view. A second view is, they're not prohibited, probably, but it's a bad idea. The third view is, it's totally neutral, it's up to them, if they want to, fine. And the fourth view is, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah for women to do these things. It's just a different kind of mitzvah than the one that men have. And that's an important point that sometimes people don't realize that there is a view, and we'll see this is basically the halacha, that it's not right to say a woman has no mitzvah to sit in a sukkah, a woman has no mitzvah to shake a lulav. A woman does have a mitzvah. She just has a different kind of mitzvah. And we'll see what this, how this works in a minute. But let's go to the first views, and look here. Number one, Ein ma'akvin es ha'tinokos min itzkoa. Shofar, very much in the Anna de Yoma. The Mishnah says we do not stop kids from blowing the shofar. If a kid wants to practice on Rosh Hashanah to blow the shofar, even though you might say, well, it's muksa, it's not, you're not doing it for a mitzvah, it's only a kid, maybe there's a problem halachically to make the sound. No, let them blow, let them practice. Avam is asking in my home, we can play around with them and teach them. Achi ilmadu, let's teach them how to blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's a beautiful day to do that. The Hamid Asik, Glo Yata, just be aware that if you're messing around with a kid to teach them, then you're not Yotze if you blow the shofar. That doesn't count as a mitzvah blow. The Hashomeya, Minamitase, Glo Yata. The kid doesn't motzi, can't be motzi you. And you, if you're hearing, if someone hears this, they cannot fulfill the mitzvah. That's fine. So a kid can blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, it just doesn't do any mitzvahs. So it says the Gemara number two, Eima Agvinas Etinaikas Militka. Let's be medayek. Let's imply out from this. Kids, you don't stop. But Hanashim, but women, Ma'akvin, you do stop. Meaning the Mishnah specifies there's a certain kind of group that you don't have to stop. That implies that there are other people that you do have to stop. The Hatanya, haven't we learned in a separate brisa, Ein Ma'akvin, Loyat Hanashim, Veloyat Tinokas Militka B'Yontov. This sounds like a completely opposite view, that if women wish to blow on Yontov, they can blow. You don't stop them. Amar Abaya, Abaya says, Lo Kasha, Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Ha Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon. And this is a very important starting point in the Shir. There are two fundamental different opinions about how this works in terms of, let me mute everybody again, in terms of how this works. Rabbi Yehuda's view is that women are not allowed to blow the shofar, and Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon is that they are, the Tanya, and they come to the mitzvah of smicha. Remember this because we'll be getting here again in a minute. What's smicha? Not smicha on a rabbi to give him rabbinic authority, but smicha on an animal. When you bring a korban, an animal, to the mikdash, you put your hands on it first, and you transfer, if you like. It was a transferal process. Either your joy and happiness, if it's a happy korban, and you'd sing shira as you put your hands on the animal, or vidui, if it's a chatat, if it's a sin offering, then you'd put your aveiras, if you like, onto the animal. So says the Gemara here, Dabero b'nei Yisrael. They have, b'nei Yisrael have to do smicha. B'nei Yisrael samchin, the ain b'nei Yisrael samchin, did Rabbi Yehuda. Women may not do smicha. We don't take the animal to the women. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Rim, Nashim samchas rishus. They'll say, no, they can if they want. So there are two different views here. The prohibitive view of Rabbi Yehuda is that when women are exempted from mitzvahs, that also means they're prohibited, it seems. Rabbi Yosef's view is that exemption is just exemption. If they want to do it, that's up to them. Rishut. It's up to them. Why would Rabbi Yehuda have a problem with a woman doing a mitzvah that she wasn't obligated to do? So Rashi, quite a famous position, Rashi jumps in to explain Rabbi Yehuda's position. Number three, Hanashim ma'agvin, the peturus legamri, they're completely not obligated in shofar. The mitzvah zashis man gromahu, it's a positive time by mitzvah. The kitaki, and if a woman blows, ikka bal tosif. Oh, bal tosif. What does bal tosif mean? So I brought you the psukim 4 and 5, I'm not going to read them through now, but there are psukim in the Torah that says you are not allowed to add on to the mitzvahs. So if a woman decides to volunteer for a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do, that's almost like a 614th mitzvah. The Torah said, I'm giving mitzvahs, God says, I'm giving mitzvahs to these people, you've decided to just jump in and do them? That's not in the Torah. The Torah never said that. You can't just, mitzvahs are meant to be obligations. You're mitzvah, you're commanded to do it. If you do something that you're not commanded to do, then that's called adding to the Torah. Adding to the Torah is effectively destroying the Torah, because the Torah is a perfect shalem body of law, and therefore if you feel you can add to it, you can improve it, you can enhance it, then that is the prohibition of bal tosif. Someone just asked a question about women on the wall, women of the wall, and I'm not going to get into that right now. I don't think I'm going to get that into that at all. But it's a good question, and someone asked here, what justifies negative behavior? The answer is nothing justifies negative behavior against the women of the wall. People have to treat everybody with dignity and respect. But I'm not getting into that whole issue now, because that's a separate issue. And what the women of the wall want to do is daven, and women are obligated in davening, but that's not for now. So, someone's asking now in the chat, isn't it a chumrah, isn't any kind of addition or a minhag maybe adding on to mitzvahs? We'll deal with all of that. So, let's say that the issue is bal tosif. Really, is it really bal tosif? Is it really the prohibition of adding to the mitzvahs for a woman to sit in a sukkah? Because Rashi, in number 6 on the chumash, loisa sifo, could go in chamesh parshas b'tfilin. Bal tosif is where you take a mitzvah. There are 4 parshas in the tfilin, you add a 5th. Okay, that's not right. Chamesh is minim balulav. There are 4 species in the lulav, and you add a 5th. Chamesh tzitzias, there are 4 tzitzias, and you add a 5th. Chayin loy tigru, so too, reducing. It means if there's a number, don't add to that number. Well, that doesn't apply here. Rashi says another thing. Arba birkas, brachas bebirkas kohenim. If the kohenim decide to make 4 brachot instead of 3, that's bal tosif. But this doesn't sound like the same thing. It's not adding on an extra 1 or 2. It's just other people doing it. The Ramban comes along and says, I give you a little bit more example, a few more examples of Baal Tosef. Look what the Ramban says. Not only adding on the number of tzitzis or the number of parshas or the number of brachas, ela'af hayashan b'sukkah b'shmini. If you want to sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, the kavana, with kavana, loike, then you get malchus. Sukkah is 7 days. You may not sleep in the sukkah on the 8th day. It's not sukkah anymore. Kamoshi muskibu m'sechus Rosh Hashanah, as it says in Rosh Hashanah. Even if you, and another example is, let's say you make up a completely new mitzvah. I think there's a mitzvah to eat nectarines and cream every Thursday afternoon. That's what God wants us to do. You just made that up. You make up a new festival. Shabbatim and Libah that you just make up from your own mind. And there's a whole discussion about Yom HaTzmaut, which we had a couple of years ago on Yom HaTzmaut. Is Yom HaTzmaut adding on to the mitzvahs or not? So you see here two more examples of Baal Tosef where it could be maybe you're sitting in a sukkah, you're extending a chag beyond its limits, or you're just inventing a new thing. But in all of these examples, just extra people doing a mitzvah, women doing a mitzvah, it's difficult to see how that's Baal Tosef. Rashi obviously understands Baal Tosef could include that as well. Just a word, by the way, you're probably thinking about this. Do we sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres? Well, if you're Hasidish, the answer is no. In Chutz La'aretz. But if you're not Hasidish and you're sitting in London, in Chutz La'aretz, or in Brooklyn or New York, whatever, do you sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres? And the answer is, yes, you do. Because it's second day Yom Tov. It's second day Yom Tov, so it's a suffix. Maybe it's sukkahs, maybe it's still Hashanah Rabbah, maybe it's Shmini Atzeres, and there's every year an enormous amount of discussion about whether you should be or you shouldn't be. In Eretz Yisrael, one thing's for sure, you don't sit in the sukkah on second, even if you're a chutznik on the second day Yom Tov. I'll tell you a funny story. Many years ago, my wife and I came for sukkahs. We were first married, we came for sukkahs to Israel. We were chutznikim, we lived in London at the time. So we came to a hotel in Yerushalayim. I can't remember exactly where it was. Maybe it was the King Solomon. I don't remember, one of the hotels then, in the 90s. And it was Shmini Atzeret. So we said, we thought we'd be chachamim. So we said, look, we're chutznikim, we need to sit in the sukkah. Where's the sukkah? Well, this was actually wrong. We should not have done this. Okay? So the guy looked at me and thought I was losing it a little bit. And he said, lo, Adoni, sukkot nigmarakvar, ze lo sukkot. I said, no, I still need to sit in the sukkah. It's still sukkot for me. And he was going, he's kind of taking me by the arm, thinking that I need help, and I'm very confused, I need to sit down, because I still think it's sukkahs, maybe I think it's still Pesach, maybe I want to eat matzah, you know, the guy was very friendly, but he literally had never heard of the idea of second day Yom Tov. Now, again, I think in retrospect, this was wrong. You don't sit in a sukkah on second day Yom Tov in Israel, even if you're a chutznik, because it might be on the verge of Baal Tosef, but it was a funny case. Israelis, secular Israelis, have mamash never heard of second day Yom Tov. Never heard of it. They think you're just pulling their leg if you say that you keep an extra day of Yom Tov. It's actually interesting to see their face. There's a lot of questions coming on the chat. I'm not getting to them now, okay, but I will, Be'ezrat Hashem, get to them. Someone asked about Kiddush, and we'll talk about a lot of these things. So Baal Tosef is one option. It's definitely one option, although it's difficult to see how Baal Tosef exactly fits with the usual understanding. And in fact, the Marashah says, I don't agree with Rashi, that's not why it's a problem. It's not a problem of Baal Tosef. This is not Baal Tosef. So what could the problem be? So let me let you in on a secret. Sukkah, even Rabbi Yehuda has no problem with. Look at this very interesting Gemara in Sukkot. It's easy to forget in Elul that it's nearly Sukkot as well. So let's not just think about Shofar. Okay, number 10. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Masi behaleni hamalka. Belud. Haleni hamalka, who was a convert to Judaism. She was Queen Helena from some round of the Azerbaijan area, and she came to converted to Judaism, and she came to live in Eretz Israel with her son and her husband, etc. And she was very frum. Gerim normally are. She was very particular. And Queen Helena Amalka was sitting in the sukkah. She had the sukkah and gevoy me'ezra amma. Her sukkah was taller than 20 amas. And the rabbis went in to greet her there. So this is being brought in the Gemara as a proof. Maybe a sukkah can be higher than 20 amos. Look at Helene Amalka's sukkah. The loy amru ladava, they didn't criticize her. So the Gemara says, amru loy mishum b'sham raya. You're bringing a raya from a woman sitting in a sukkah. Isha haita, she is a woman. Put in a sukkah. She can sit in any sukkah. The sukkah could be 100 meters high. She doesn't have to sit in a sukkah. She's a woman. So amalehen, so he said to them, 1 second, v'haloi shiva banim havula. The sons were with her as well. And not only, so obviously it was a sukkah, but I'd call ma'aseh loy asa el al-pi chachamim. And she would never do anything unless it was what the rabbis told her to do. She was very, very careful. She was very frum. So, interestingly, it turns out that actually Rabbi Yehuda himself has no problem with a woman sitting in a sukkah. So, if it's Baal Tosef, how are you allowed to sit in a sukkah? What's more, there were other women who did positive time bar mitzvahs. Have a look in number 11, quite a famous case. Koshehu b'talmud Torah chai b'tfilin. If a woman is obligated in Torah, she has to wear tefillin. Okay? Or if a person, rather, is obligated in Torah, she has to wear tefillin. Noshim, women, she'enu chayev b'talmud Torah. Women are not obligated to learn Torah in the same way as men. Enu chayev up b'tfilin. They don't have to wear tefillin. Next week, we'll talk a little bit about tefillin in more detail. Hetiva, so they raise a question. This midrash. Hari Michal bat Kushi haita loveshet tefillin. In the discussion today about women wearing tefillin, Michal bat Kushi. Kushi is Shaul. Why he's called Kushi, I'm not getting into now. Michal wore tefillin. V'ishto shel Yonah haita mole aboli regalim. And Yonah's wife would go on aliyah l'regal. Which is also a mitzvah which is positive in time bound. V'loi michu v'yan chachamim. The rabbis never criticized them. They didn't say no. So Rabbi Chizkiya says, "V'shem Rabbi Avahu, Ishto shel Yonah husva." Now maybe they were criticized, but Mrs. Yonah was taken back. U'michal ba'kushi michal b'yad ha'chachamim. Maybe they did criticize them, but the point is, there is a view here that these women did these things. Nobody accused them of Baal Tosef and da 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 da. At least the first opinion that they weren't criticized. By the way, why, what is relevant about Mrs. Yonah? Yonah's wife did aliyah l'regel. This is actually very poetic because her husband spent his time trying to run away from the Shekhinah. That's the whole story of Yonah. So Ashes Yonah, she wanted to do a tikkun for her husband's running away from God, and she wanted to run towards God, even though when she wasn't obligated. But you see from here that actually there are examples of women through history who have done positive time bar mitzvahs, who don't seem to have been criticized in this way for being guilty of Baal Tosef. Helenia Marcus had in a sukkah, Michal Bat Shol wore tefillin, Mrs. Yonah went on aliyah l'regel. Why don't we say Baal Tosef, Baal Tosef? So it comes along the Re in Tosfos and has a different approach, which is important for us to understand. His approach is, no, it's not a general prohibition on Baal Tosef. I'll tell you why it's a problem for women to take on certain mitzvahs. It's only certain mitzvahs. Meaning, if there's no separate prohibition in a woman doing the mitzvah, then it's fine. There's no problem with a woman sitting in a sukkah. There's no problem with a woman shaking a lulav. There's no downside. And there's no Baal Tosef, he says. It's nothing to do with Baal Tosef. But where there is a downside in a woman doing a mitzvah, for example, tefillin. Tefillin, says the Re, this is a famous line, the Re says, tefillin needs guf naki. It needs a clean body. Whatever that means, and there's a whole halachic discussion. Does it mean a person's not allowed to pass wind wearing tefillin? Is it a reference with women and menstruation? I'm not getting into all of that now. We should do a proper shir on women and tefillin because it needs a real analysis. But whatever the issue of guf naki is, says the Re, that's more of a problem for women. There's more to say on that. Aliyah l'regel is potentially an issue. It looks like you're bringing non-kodshim to the mikdash because you're not obligated. Shofar, there's a problem blowing it if it's not a mitzvah, because you're not allowed to blow a shofar on Shabbos or Yom Tov unless it's for a mitzvah. So he says in certain situations, a woman might not be allowed to do a positive time bar mitzvah where there's a specific issue with that mitzvah. But there's no general problem. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Now, as we'll see, we don't actually follow Rabbi Yehuda. So all of this is an exercise in theory, not in practice. But the first opinion at least understands here, just like to get it clear in our minds, that maybe a woman's not allowed to do a positive mitzvah because there's a prohibition. Even a general prohibition of Baal Tosef, maybe a specific prohibition in each of the mitzvahs that it relates to, but where there's no problem, then it's fine. Okay? That's the approach number one. Approach number two is a Gemara Yerushalmi. V'tanei chizkiya, kol mishehu potter midavar, anyone who is exempt from something, v'oiseu, and wants to do it anyway, nikra hedyot, is called a hedyot. What's a hedyot? A hedyot is, it's clearly linked to the word idiot as well in modern English, but it doesn't really mean that. A hedyot means a simpleton. Foolish. It's foolish. Why would you do something that you are not obligated in? Why not? What's the problem? So the Ramban raises again the issue of Baal Tosef. The minute you're starting to take on things that you're not obligated in, it looks as though you are adding to the mitzvot. And this idea of just doing something which is clearly not a mitzvah, that could itself be problematic. They ask this question, if it's raining in the sukkah, are you allowed to sit in the sukkah in the rain? I'm not talking about the first night where there may be a different halacha. But let's say it's the chalamayit sukkahs, and it's pouring with rain. And you say, I don't care, I want to sit in the sukkah anyway, because this is God's holy sukkah, and the fact that it's raining, I'll manage. The answer is, you're exempt, you're potter from the sukkah. You only have to sit in the sukkah like you'd sit in the house. You wouldn't sit in the house if there was water pouring through the ceiling on top of your head. So why on earth are you sitting in the sukkah when there's water pouring on top of your head? So, as you know, the Chabadnikim are very particular. They sit in the sukkah even in the rain. So people throw at them this potter and say, surely if you do a mitzvah which is not even a mitzvah, nikrahediyat, that's called foolishness. Like, what are you trying to do? It's not even a mitzvah. Okay, they have responses and answers to that. Someone asked on the group, what about keeping a chumrah? That is this section in number 15 here. Says, of course, if you're doing something extra because you're not sure, maybe you're obligated in the mitzvah. There's a suffix, it's not clear, whatever. Okay, that's different. That's different. Because then there's a question, maybe I am, maybe I'm not. I want to be careful. Then you're not called a hedyot. But when you know for absolute certainty that there is no obligation, but you say, I'm going to do it anyway, foolishness, this opinion says. And therefore, for a woman to take on a mitzvah may not be prohibited, maybe on the edge, but it may just be silly because there's no point to it. You're not in the groove of obligation. Why are you putting yourself in? Okay. End of that section. Now let me open up a third option. That maybe there's no mitzvah for women to take on these voluntary things, but maybe it's important. Maybe it's important. If women want to, then they should not be stopped from doing things that they want to do. This is actually throws up lots of interesting new questions. So, number 16. Why did Rabbi Yossi not have an issue with Baal Tosef? He said, no, women can do smicha rushut. If they want to do smicha on the korban, they can do that. So look in number 16. I'm Rabbi Yossi. Sach li Abba Eliezer. I have a tradition. Abba Eliezer, that was his name, Father Eliezer. He was quite common, by the way, in the Second Temple period and just after, for Jewish rabbis to have the line Father, for the name Father. Like Lahavdil, priests have today, Father Patrick. There weren't many Abba Patricks back in the day, but Abba Eliezer or Abba Elozer, they were those as well. Abba Shmuel, Abba Shaul, there were a few of them. Pam achat hayalanu egel shel zivchei shlomim. Listen to this story. It once happened, this is not a midrash, this is an account. It once happened that we had a korban that was brought to the temple. A shlomim. Now a shlomim was often a family affair. Okay? People brought it together, it was a celebratory korban. So heviyuna la ezras noshim, and they took it into the ezras noshim. They took it into the women's section of the temple for the women to do smicha. V'samcho alav noshim, and the women did smicha. That's not because they're obligated. It's not because I hold that women are obligated in smicha. They're not. But because, said Rabbi Yossi, it was necessary to bring nachat ruach to the women. Now this is a fascinating question. This approach says, look, if a woman is not obligated in a mitzvah, but she wants to do it, and is unhappy at being prevented from doing it, that itself is a problem. Why would you want an unhappy section of the population when there's no problem with it anyway? Look, Rabbi Yehuda says it's Baal Tosef. Okay, I'm not going to mess with Baal Tosef or something like that. But if a woman wants to do smicha, why have a load of people complaining and unhappy? So let's take the korban round. Now, the question is this a principle within Judaism? Is there an obligation on some level to try and go the extra mile in something which is not prohibited in order to make sure that there aren't an unhappy group of people, unhappy women, unhappy whatever it is, specifically women in this case. That could be that could have all sorts of ramifications in different areas. Okay, we'll get to rabbinic mitzvahs in a minute. Okay. Someone put here, smicha, there's loads of questions today. Everyone's very excited about this topic. I never got this many questions about locusts, I must tell you. Okay, we'll try and deal with, I'll try and leave 5 minutes for the questions at the end. Okay. So, is there a concept of bringing nachat ruach to women? Maybe there is. Finally, before we get to the issue of the brachot, maybe there's another approach, which is, no, we've got the wrong end of the stick here. When we say that women are allowed to do these mitzvahs, it's not just that they're allowed. It's actually a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. It's just a different kind of mitzvah. Look at this, look at number 17. Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was blind. It's nothing to do with women directly. Rav Yosef was blind, says the Goran Kiddushin. He says, Mireish Hava Amina, I used to think, Manda Hava Amali Halachik Rabbi Yehuda. If you can prove to me the halach is Rabbi Yehuda, who said, the Amar Summa Potim and Amitzvahs, the blind people are exempted. There's a discussion in the Gemara. Are blind people obligated in mitzvot? One view says no. One view says yes. Said Rav Yosef, I'm blind. I want you to prove me, to prove to me that blind people are exempted, that I don't have to do anything. Avid the Yom HaLetavah L'Rabbanan, I'll make a kiddush. I'll make a meal for the rabbis. The Haloi Miskida, because I'm not commanded, I'm exempt from being blind, the Havid, but I want to volunteer. I want to do them anyway. Hashtid the Shmais Leila Adam Rav Chanina, but now I've changed my mind. Now that I heard the ruling of Rabbi Chanina, Godul Mitzvah Va'Oisa Yosem Yimisha Eina Mitzvah Va'Oisa, that actually it's better to be obligated in mitzvot, not to volunteer. Adarabba, on the contrary, Manda Amali Ein Halacha Rabbi Yehuda. Now if you can prove to me that I am obligated, the Halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, that a blind person is obligated, Avidna Yuma Tavala Rabbanan, I want to make a Yom Tov, I want to make a Kiddush. Basically, Rav Yosef wanted to make a Kiddush either way. Yeah, he was keen to make a Kiddush. And first of all, he said, if you can prove to me that I'm not obligated, then I'll do them as a volunteer and I'll be excited. Now that I know that it's better to be commanded, that's exciting too. But it's clear from here that there is a value to doing mitzvot, even if you're not obligated. He wanted to do them as a volunteer. It may be better to be obligated, like we paskin, like Rav Chanina, Godol Mitzvah Va'Oisa. It's better to be commanded, because then, like all of the Bria, like all of creation, you're doing what God has instructed you to do. It's better not to be a volunteer, but a volunteer is also someone who does a mitzvah. And there are many sources that support this idea. I brought you the Masa Vitri in number 18, which we're going to come back to later. Let me read you a Ramban. This is a seminal Ramban. If any woman ever has a question about her relationship with sukkah, with lulav, with shofar, etc., says the Ramban the follows. Ein ma'ak v'nes anoshim nitzkoa. If a woman wants to blow shofar on Yom Tov, she can. Even though there is a potential downside, because blowing a shofar is not normally allowed if it's not a mitzvah, and surely if a woman blows it, it's not a mitzvah because she's exempt. Shmamin aliterech mitzvahu. No, we say this is for a mitzvah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tziva b'mitzvah zo la'anashim chova, because God commanded the men as an obligation, ulanashim rushut, and God commanded the women as a rushut. This is a whole new world of understanding. Do women do a mitzvah if they sit in a sukkah? Yes. Are they commanded to? Yes, but not as an obligation, but as an option. God said to the men, you have to sit in the sukkah, says the Ramban. God said to the women, you can, and maybe you should, and it's a mitzvah, and it's great, but it's up to you. You've got a choice. You have choices. If you do it, it's a mitzvah. It's a little bit like having children, right? Men are obligated in having children. Women are not obligated in having children. So if a woman, on a Torah level anyway, if a woman has a child, does she do a mitzvah? Of course she does a mitzvah. It was just a different kind of mitzvah. It's a Torah mitzvah to have children for women as well. It's just not a Torah obligation. It's what's called a mitzvah kiyumit rather than a mitzvah chiyuvit. And so too the Ritva says that if a woman does a mitzvah, afagav deloy michoyiv a mitzvah ikah, she's still a mitzvah alayu, v'noteled aleihem schar, and they get reward in the world to come. Now, I don't know what it means, by the way, to have more reward or less reward in the world to come. If the world to come is infinite, can there be bigger and smaller infinities? The answer is mathematically, of course, there can be bigger and smaller infinities, but the fact that you say that this person has more reward in the world to come because they're obligated and this one has less, that itself raises the question of what's really going on there. And as I say, there's a lot of examples here of people who are einu mitzvah va'osa, who want to take on mitzvahs, they're not commanded, but they still did a mitzvah. Ad kedei kach, what if a non-Jew wants to do a mitzvah? What if a non-Jew comes to you on Sukkot and says, I'd like to sit in the Sukkah. Can I sit in the Sukkah? I'd like to shake your lulav. And I'd like to come and hear your shofar. Do we turn around to the non-Jew and say, oh, no, this is ridiculous. No, you're not coming to the Sukkah. You're not Jewish. Or do we turn around and say, Bavakasha, come and do a mitzvah with us. The Rambam says, if a non-Jew wants to do a mitzvah, he can do a mitzvah. And it's a mitzvah. Ben Noach, number 22, Ben Noach Sheratza La'asod Mitzvah. If a non-Jew wants to do a mitzvah, Mishar Mitzvah Tatara, any of the mitzvahs, maybe with the exception of Shabbos. Okay? Because Shabbos is a separate question. Kedei Lekabel Schar. They want reward in the world to come. Ein Meinen Oitza La'asod Kilchata. We don't stop them doing it, and we don't stop them doing it according to the Halacha. The Radvaz says, clearly, if they want to do it as an einu mitzvah, they say, I know I'm a non-Jew. I know that I only have 7 mitzvahs b'nei Noach. But as someone who volunteers, I also want to keep kosher, shake a lulav, sit in the sukkah, eat matzah. They can. And it's a mitzvah. It's remarkable. If that's true of a non-Jew, then kal v'chomer, a million times of a Jewish woman who is included in the Kedusha of Yisrael, and therefore when she does a mitzvah, which she's not obligated in, it nevertheless is still a mitzvah. And that basically is the halacha, number 24 here, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin's bottom line. We've had lots of different opinions. Afal pisha nashim peturos in Hilchos Shofar, even though women are exempted, yecholot litkoa. If a woman wants to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, she can, for herself. She can pick up a shofar, she can blow it, she can teach herself how to blow a shofar. And the Mishnah Brura adds, the Loyam Rinan, we do not say Kaven de Petura, since she's exempted, Yesh Chilul Yontef B'Tchiyatam, that she's breaking Yontef by playing a musical instrument, it's not a mitzvah. De Kaimalan, we paskin, Godul Mitzvah V'Oiz Misha En Mitzvah V'Oiz. Say, yes, someone who is obligated has a greater schar. Alma, but nevertheless, the Misha En Mitzvah V'Oiz Sinam Mitzvah Yesh La. Even though she's a volunteer, she still gets a reward in Olam Haba. So to draw a line under that part of the shir, is a woman allowed to volunteer for a mitzvah? 4 views. Number 1, no. There's a prohibition. What could the prohibition be? Baltosif, maybe. That's a little bit difficult because of the way Baltosif works. Specific prohibitions in each mitzvah. Tefillin, shofar, da-da, but where there's no problem, fine. That's one view. A second view, she's allowed, but it's foolishness. Why would you volunteer to do something completely where there is no mitzvah at all? You're a hedyot. Number 3, there isn't a mitzvah, but don't leave people unhappy. If a woman wants to do it, then there's a value in bringing nachat ruach l'nashim. Don't stop people from doing things which they want to do, because you'll just have unhappy campers, and that itself is not a good thing. And number 4, yes, there is a mitzvah for a woman to volunteer. She's not the same as a man. She doesn't get the same reward, whatever that means. But it's nevertheless a mitzvah. And a woman can absolutely sit in a sukkah, and she can blow a shofar, and she can shake a lulav. And if she does so, there is a mitzvah. We need to have a separate conversation as to what's going on with tefillin and tzitzis. Why do we have an issue with tefillin and tzitzis? But that's not for now. That is not for now. There are other factors at play, and maybe we'll have a shiur on that, dealing specifically with the issues. Okay, part 2. Part 2 of the shiur now gets on to the fascinating question of a brocha. Okay, so let's say we've established a woman is allowed to do a voluntary mitzvah. Can she make a brocha? She wants to make a brocha. Asher ki nishan mitzvah v'tzivanu leishev v'sukkah. Al lishmo b'kol shofar. So the Rambam says, absolutely not. Absolutely not. How can she possibly make a brocha? Look at this Rambam number 25. The Noshim Shirotsu Li Tafik Batitsis. A woman who wants to wear a talis. Mitatsim. Let her wear a talis. The Rambam has no problem with women wearing titsis and a talis. We'll get to that another time. But below brocha. But she may not make a brocha on it. The Chen Shah Mitzvah Zashah Shah Noshim Baturis Mehen. Any other positive mitzvah the women are exempted from. Im Rotsu Lasos. I said, if they want to do them below brocha, as long as they don't make a brocha, Ein Mamachim B'yadam. We don't stop them. Okay, that might sound a little bit parav. We don't stop them, but don't forget that the Rambam has already said that even a non-Jew who does a voluntary mitzvah gets reward, so certainly a woman will get reward. He says it clearly with Talmud Torah as well, that a woman gets reward, but she can't make a brocha. Now, why not? What's the problem with a woman making a brocha? So there are three potential issues. Issue number one is, maybe it's a brocha levatala. I don't know. The Gemara never actually addresses directly this question. It's remarkable. The Gemara addresses lots and lots of details, but this detail it never discusses. Is or is not a woman, is a woman allowed or not to make a brocha on a voluntary mitzvah? So one view is no, because maybe it's a suffix brocha levatala. And don't forget the Rambam holds very strongly that if you make a brocha levatala, you are breaking one of the Ten Commandments. You're taking God's name in vain. You're making an oath in vain. And therefore, the Rambam says about brachas, when in doubt, leave it out. That's the golden rule. When in doubt, leave it out. There is no way you can make a bracha if there is any doubt that there is a potential bracha levatala. And therefore, that's one reason why the Rambam may come very heavily. And of course, you don't need to make a bracha. You don't need to make a bracha in order to do the mitzvah. So no bracha, says the Rambam. That's one reason. A second reason which is raised by the poskim, which is how can the woman say, V'tzivanu. Look here. V'teima gadol. Hagos maimonis. V'teima gadol hu deheich taima asher kidushan v'mitzvah esav v'tzivanu. V'dava she'enu chayavois. She says God has commanded us to do this. Midoraita lo midrabonon. They're not commanded. Meaning it's sheker. If a woman says, before she shakes the lulav, God, you have commanded us to shake the lulav. Lo nachon. That's not true. You just said something that's not true. God never commanded you to shake the lulav. God commanded the men to shake the lulav. You decided you wanted to. That's fine. But don't tell me that you were obliged to, because that's not true. So that's another big question that's raised. And a third question is, never too far away is this specter of Baal Tosef. The Shibali Aleket brings Rabbi Yeshaya, one of the Rishonim, who says, Rabbeinu Yeshaya, that it's not Baal Tosef for a woman to do a mitzvah that she's a volunteer in. But once she makes the bracha, and says, Asher kidushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, that shows that she thinks that she is obligated, and that makes it Baal Tosef. And therefore, the bracha is going to do a lot of harm. Therefore, the view against, which is the Rambam, and the classical Sfardi view, we'll see the Shulchan Aruch practice this way, is women may not make a bracha on a time-bound mitzvah that she's a volunteer in, either because it's potentially a bracha in vain, which is oy v'avoy, breach of the Ten Commandments, or because she can't say v'tzivanu, because it's not true, or because the bracha itself shows that she thinks she's obligated, and that might make it Baal Tosef. Now, anyone on this Zoom who is Ashkenazi, I can't tell, of course, who's Ashkenazi and who's not. I know a few people are Sephardi, but I don't see any Sephardi women on the chat. I'm sure there are a few. There are for sure a lot of Ashkenazi women. So, for the Ashkenazi women out there, When you do a mitzvah, like sitting in a sukkah, do you make a brocha or do you not make a brocha? The answer is, of course you make a brocha. Ashkenazi women make a brocha. The question is, how? How do they do that? And there's an enormous amount of material which seeks to justify how Ashkenazi women make brochas on these mitzvahs. This is a very early thing. I brought you in 29 and 30, two sources from the rabbis of Rashi, okay, Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi and Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yehuda, and both of them clearly say that she can make a brocha on the mitzvah. Look here, number 29. We do not stop a woman from making a brocha on a lulav and sukkah. This is 1,000 years ago, okay, just at the beginning of the Ashkenazim. These people were students of Rabbeinu Gershom, going back a long way. Jahamrina b'perik kama dekidushin, he goes through the whole parsha, the whole sugi there, that women can do them, they just don't have to do them. Aval im chafet says lahavi atzman ba'oil ha-mitzvah. If they want to bring themselves under the yoke of this mitzvah, harishus b'yada, they can do that if you like. A mochim ya'la, we do not tell them not to. The loy garim emisha ein mitzvah v'oiseh, it's Jesus mitzvah v'oiseh. Like I said before, she's doing a mitzvah. Like we saw in the Ramban, in the Ritzvah, she's doing a mitzvah. And he says, how can you do a mitzvah without making a brocha?
And by the way, there's such a strong psychology here. For so many people, even though you know in your mind that the bracha and the mitzvah are two different things, once I tell you you can't make the bracha, you feel very lukewarm about the mitzvah. I mean, what's the perfect example? Sfiras HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer, everyone's in, they're in with the bracha. Comes day, I don't know, 26, the guy forgets to count. So the next day the Rav says to him, don't worry, you can just count from now on, you just can't make a bracha. Yeah, no, I don't know. A mitzvah without a bracha is pasnish. Of course, it's not true. The bracha has got nothing to do with the mitzvah. You should count without a bracha. But everybody knows that a bracha is part of the feeling, the chush of doing the mitzvah. And the rabbis of Rashi, like I said, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar Yehuda, all say that women can make a bracha. Interestingly, Rashi himself did not allow women to make a bracha on positive time bar mitzvahs. He went against his rabbis, but his students went back to the Ashkenazi position, which was, and there's a very important Tosfos here, the Tosfos bring all sorts of proofs why it could be that, that women are allowed to make a bracha. It sounds a little bit like there was a minhag of women to make a bracha, and the rabbis are, you know, really trying to justify that minhag. They're scrabbling to find a reason why. It sounds, and we'll see in a minute, that's explicit in one of the later sources, that this was something that women started doing, and now women are doing it, we kind of have to find a way of justifying it. A little bit like there's a brocha, she'asani kitzonah. You know the brocha that women say every morning, she'asani kitzonah? That brocha does not appear in the Gemara. That brocha was invented by women in the Middle Ages, who wanted to make a brocha instead of shaloi sani isha. They made a bracha, she'asani kitzonah. And then, after that, all the rabbis are scrabbling to try and find a reason why this is a good bracha. But they made the bracha. Okay? So it sounds like women here also started making brachas on mitzvahs, and all the rabbis are trying to find reasons. And this Tosfos is worth a long read. I haven't got time for a long read now. But he clearly says that women, Ashkenazi women, are allowed to make these brachas. He brings proof. He says, Michal bat Shaul put on tefillin. Do you think she'd put on tefillin without a bracha? It's like a funny proof, no? He also says Rav Yosef wanted to volunteer for mitzvahs. Remember that Gemara? You think he'd want to volunteer for mitzvahs and not be able to make a bracha? Nah, he'd never want to do that. If he wouldn't be allowed to make a bracha, he wouldn't want to do the mitzvahs. This psychology of bracha seems to be extremely deep. And also, don't forget, on the three issues that I mentioned, maybe it's a bracha levatola. So Tosfos says clearly at the end, look here, when we shum the bracha, the mavarech bracha she'ena tzricha, when you were asking me, maybe she makes a bracha for nothing, or ka'ava mishur baltisa, leka. That's not an issue. The hahid rosha the rabbonon. The Ashkenazim paskin, that to say a bracha in vain is not a breach of the Ten Commandments. They disagree with the Sfardi Psak. The Rambam rules that to say a bracha in vain, let's say I walk into the room one day. I walk into the room one day and I feel so full of excitement. I just say, I've just got to make a bracha. I'm not eating anything. And I say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Lekeinu Melech Olam, Shehakol Nihyeh Bivara. Out of the blue. Because I feel like praising God. For the Rambam, that I just broke the Ten Commandments. For the Ashkenazim, I did an Issa D'Rabbanan. That's a rabbinic. It's serious. You can't do that. But you're telling me that, taking God's name in vain? No, you're making a bracha. You're just making a bracha inappropriately. You're meant to be having a glass of Coke afterwards. Okay, so find yourself a glass of Coke and make the bracha. But it's a rabbinic prohibition. And therefore, the Tosfos says, I'm not as bothered about that. What about the issue of Vitzivanu? What about the issue of Vitzivanu? How can the women say Vitzivanu? So you probably know what I'm about to say. How can a woman turn around and say, God, you have commanded us to do these things? So you could either answer, and the Ran answers this, either you could say they're talking about the Jewish people generally, okay? They're not talking about them. They're saying, Vitzivanu, Klal Yisrael has been commanded. Just like when women bench. When women bench and they say, V'al britacha shechatamta b'vifarenu. We thank you for the bris which you have placed on our bodies. So they're not talking about themselves, pashtus. They're talking about the Jewish people. They're giving thanks for Brit Milah for the Jews. So too here, Asher Kibishar Mitzvah, Vitzivanu, plurally, the Jewish people. Or you can say, like we said, that the Jewish women have a mitzvah. It's just a different kind of mitzvah. And therefore, they are perfectly entitled to say Vitzi Vanu. Okay, good. Not only the Ashkenazim, but even in Spain, okay, the Rashba, who is in Spain, student of the Ramban. He says 32, he scanty gidivrei misha omer she'im ravtu oizos kol mitzvah sasei umma barachos. So it's not just the Ashkenazim. There are Sfardim as well, not the Rambam, who say that they can make a bracha. Okay, bottom line. And this is where it starts to get hot. In the last 10 minutes of the shir, we're going to see some pyrotechnics. What is the halacha l'maisa? So it splits very predictably, Shulchan Aruch Ramah. Look at number 34. Afal pi she'nashim paturos, even though women are exempt, yichol alitko, they can blow the shofar, says the Machaber, says Rav Yosef Karo. Okay, so that's a different thing we'll get to next week. Aval ein mevarachos, they mustn't make a bracha. Women mustn't make a bracha. V'loy livarachu alehem, and the men shouldn't make a bracha for them. That's, I'm not getting into that now. Says the Ramah, v'haminag shehanoshim mevarachos al mitzvahs asher she'az man groma. Our minag as Ashkenazim is our women do make a bracha. Al kein gam kan tevarchena la'atzma. Like a woman can make a bracha and blow her own shofar. Or make a bracha and listen to a man blowing a shofar. And as you know, that the minag of the Ashkenazim is that they allow women to make brachas. They require women to make brachas. There are a few exceptions. I brought you a reference to the Dibrei Chaim of Sans, who actually says that women shouldn't even be doing these mitzvahs and certainly shouldn't be making a bracha. But in the Ashkenazi world, there was almost total agreement that that's what they do. What about the Sfaradim? So look at this piece from the Chidah. Who is the Chidah? Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai. Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, the Chidah, a very, very important Sephardi posek from the 18th century. Look at what he says. We need to look at this carefully because this source is going to, I think, raise some eyebrows. He says as follows. Ma shenagu ktsat nashim be'eretz hatzvi. He says there seems to be a minag in Sephardi women in Israel, lebarech al alulav. They make a brocha on alulav. I've spent years trying to stop this, he says. Years. The Nagu Kach Ma'atzman, they made it up. The women made it up. No one ever told them they could do this. Sephardi women making a bracha on a mitzvah like this. The Anan Kibalno Hoy Ra'ot HaRambam Maran, we followed the Rambam Umaran and we followed Rabbi Yosef Karo. The Hei Paske Shilol of Aref, they said not to make a bracha. Sha'alti Lechachamim Zikne Dora, I've asked rabbis on this, he writes. The Hei Ma'amru Dehu Minak Tals. It's a minag, it's a nonsense minag. It's a mistake. Stop them. The women don't know what they're doing. You have to stop this minag as soon as you can. Okay? Seems very straightforward. But then he had a complete volte-face. Look what happens next. The Achazman Rav, after a long time of behaving in this way as the Rav, Valiadi Kuntrus mi Rabbeinu Yaakov mi Marvej, mi Ravusa Kamai, I found this book of Shilas and Tshuvas Min HaShamayim from Rav Yaakov of Marvej, one of the Balei HaTosfos in Ashkenaz in the 12th, 13th century. The Maisolei HaRav Shivolei Alekhen, it's brought by other Meforshim. What happened to this? What did this particular Rav do? Shehaya Shoyel Min HaShamayim Umeshivin Lo. This is a very strange business. Shilas and Tshuvas Min HaShamayim, he put himself into a trance, into a sleep, and in his dreams, he asked Shilas, he got to the heavenly court, and he asked halachic questions that he'd always wanted to know the answers to. Let me ask you a question. If you had the opportunity for an audience with a heavenly court in your dreams, and you had questions to put to the Beis Din Shalmala, what would be first on your list? So, first on his list was, can a woman make a bracha on a lulav? Which is interesting as to why that bothered him so much. But Kasav Sham, Sif Aleph, the very first of these questions he says, Sha'alti, this is Rav Yaakov Marvej, Sha'alti al Anashim, Shemavarachas al Alul, I asked the heavenly court, can women make a bracha al Alul? Va'atzkir Shofar on the Shofar? In Yesh Aveira, is that an Aveira? V'im Havya bracha levatola, is that a bracha for no reason? Achre She'enu Mitzolos, because they're not commanded. Look at the answer. Hey Shivu, he answered, he said the following, the key, Achshe Dairi, Are you guys any better than the old guys? You guys know better? Kol asher tomer alecha sara shma b'kola. Haven't we been told in the Chumash that when the women tell you to do something, you do it? You don't argue with women. Avram Avinu was told, if Sarah says to do this, you do it. The women know what they're doing, said the heavenly court. Lech amo lehem, go and tell the women. Shuvu lachem lo alechem, go home and be happy. Baruch Hu es Hashem Elokechem, make brachas. the Eid Megillah of Hanukkah, and then he says Megillah and Hanukkah, where the women were included in the Nace. And then he says Shofar especially, because of Malchias and Zichronis, the women are included. Lulav, because they have, Lulav is like Lev Echad, the Jewish people have Lev Echad, one heart, unity to Hashem, which segues beautifully. If you remember from the end of last week, it talks about Chana having Beliba, Lev Echad, the special relationship with the Shechina. So basically, the voice from heaven told Rav Yaakov of Marvej, the women know what they're doing. Let them make a bracha. The Sephardi women. And later on, he says even, in a later tshuva, the Chidah, he says, Vahagam de Maran Pasak Shelo Yivarchu, even though the Shulchan Aruch says not to make a bracha, Nira de Vadai de Ilu Maran Shaltu Ma'or Einav HaKadoshim B'tshuvas Rabbeinu Yaakov B'Marvej. If the Shulchan Aruch had only had the opportunity to see this book of amazing tshuvas from heaven, the Mishamaya Mayavikayach Levarit, not sure that the heavenly court told the women they can make a bracha, Vadai Kach Hayaposik Umani. That would have been his sack. Now, let me ask you a question. Is there anything remotely strange or sketchy about people asking shilas to heavenly courts and bringing down answers and writing them in halacha svarim? And the answer is yes. Lo b'shamayim hi, tano shalachnoi. You know, we don't listen to a baskol. All of a sudden, Rav Yaakov of Marvej has asked, gone into a dream and asked shilas from heaven. I must tell you a story. When I was in yeshiva many years ago, so there was a guy who got very into this sefer, Shailos and Tshuvos Min HaShamayim. And he used to study it, he used to read it. One of the young guys in yeshiva, one of the ramim in yeshiva came up to him and shut the book and said, don't learn this. This is not what you should be learning. We don't go to heaven and ask Shailos. We don't go to God and ask him what to do. That's not how it works. We don't paskin from a baskal, etc. Interesting. The Chidah actually addresses this question, and he says, look, it's not like they're making up a new thing from heaven, they're just deciding an existing question which was debated as to whether the women should or shouldn't make a bracha, and he says, as far as I'm concerned, it's valid, but you can understand how there are people who were not happy about it. Nevertheless, there is a minag amongst many Sephardi women, especially for Lulav, especially for Shofar, that they make a bracha, even though Sephardi women generally do not make a bracha. For example, Rav Ben-Tzion Uziel, here in number 37, basically says Sephardi women can make a bracha on positive time bar mitzvahs, because that is a Kabbalah. They get that from the Chidah. They have this tradition. The Tzitz Eliezer, who was Ashkenazi as they come, okay, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, writes in one of his tshuvas, says, go for it, you Sephardi women. He says, Yesh lechazek biyadehem. We need to strengthen them and support them in Hagam Bazeh. Ukefisha kibanu mitaras imam. They got this as a Torah from their mothers. Ula teklehem barots on their levarais. They wish to make this bracha. Ula oida demakach. We have to support these Sephardi women. It's like almost like a Sephardi women bracha support system. Don't let them get you down. Don't let them tell you not to make the brachas. You can go for it. Ashrehem benayt Yisrael. How amazing that the women want to do mitzvahs, like Kabbalah Leim, like Kaimim, Mumabarachais, that they want to make brachas, etc. But let's give the last word on this to Rav Avadi Yosef. Rav Avadi Yosef, of course, who's one of his main shitot, his main approaches in Halachic Sect, was to restore the sovereignty of Maran, of the Rav Yosef Karo on these issues. He basically cuts through all of this. And that's one of the reasons why he was very controversial, even in the Sephardi Psak, especially because he didn't necessarily uphold Sephardi Minhagim and tradition from Baghdad, from wherever. He said, we pass him like the Shulchan Aruch. And look what he says, number 39. Hari loy banu Ashkenazios. He says, I'm not trying to tell Ashkenazi women what to do. They should ask their own rabbis. I'm not telling them to go against the Ramah. God forbid. My job is to speak to the Sephardi women. And I'll quote you from this Chidah. He says, they did it without knowing what they were doing. I want them to go back to the Psak of the Rambam, Umaran, and to the Shulchan Aruch. They shouldn't be making brachas in vain. Ah, what about Rebbe Eliezer Waldenberg? What about the Tzitz Eliezer who says, go for it. You can do it. I support you. What he says, in Sheharav Tzitz Eliezer Shlita Ohaveinu, if we love Rabbi Waldenberg very much, ha'emet ahuva yoter, we love truth more than we love Rav Waldenberg. And therefore he said, basically, stay out of our Sfaradi halacha, please, because we're not going to listen to you. And therefore says, v'cholam avatul minag anashim, anyone who can stop women from making brachas, al alulav, on alulav, tachol alav brachot. Brikasei, shall this one and that one, etc. And he says, tavo alav bracha, women should absolutely be not be making brachas on positive time-bound mitzvah. So to conclude, and then I'll spend a minute maybe looking, addressing the questions that were raised, to conclude on the issue of brachas, even though everyone agrees that women are welcome and encouraged to do positive time-bound mitzvahs, tefillin and tzitzis being an exception to be dealt with, there's a mitzvah when they do them, there is a big debate on whether they should make a brocha. The Ashkenazi position is almost certainly that they can say Vetzivanu, it's not a brocha levatzola. The Sfardi position is basically that they cannot, and then you have this little bubble of Sfardi minhag, which was developed by the women themselves, and upheld by this unusual book of Shaaretz and Tshuvos from heaven that seems to be supported so much by the Chida. Someone gave me, there's so many questions today. Is a chumrah not adding to a mitzvah we dealt with? What if she already heard the shofar in the morning and then blows again? That's next week. You make kiddush in the evening but you don't eat there. Well, maybe we'll deal with kiddush next week. Is it possible to send the sauces again, please? Yes, that's easy. I can do that. Okay, we'll do that right at the very end. What if she already heard shofar in the morning and then blows it again? Is that Baal Tosef? Good question. No, I don't think so, because women are allowed to blow shofar, even if she always is yotze the mitzvah. Maybe she'll be doing it for someone else or whatever, another woman, if she can do that for another. We'll see next week whether that works. Smicha by a woman might invalidate the korban. Why would smicha by women invalidate the korban? I'm not sure why that is. If a woman touches a korban, she wouldn't invalidate it. She just doesn't have to do smicha. The Rambam explains regarding rabbinic mitzvahs, it's only adding if you say it's obligated by the Torah. Yes, that's very true. With rabbinic mitzvahs, you're not allowed to think that they're obligated by the Torah. If they suddenly don't wear them when they're in Nidda, they'll be advertising this fact when they're modern. Okay, I'm not getting into that. Someone wrote to here, bad example about having children. I don't quite know what that means. That just means it's just a bad idea to have children generally, because they just cause a lot of heartache. I don't think that's what they meant. But maybe they meant that it's not the same kind of thing. If it's not the same thing, then tell me why not. Final two questions. What about a bar mitzvah teacher who is approached to teach a bat mitzvah girl how to lay? Oh, that's an interesting question. It may be that women should know how to lay, they just shouldn't lay. Okay, that's a different issue. How does a child before bar mitzvah make brachot? Because of the mitzvah of chinuch. They have an obligation of chinuch, either on the parents or the child. Can women establish a chazakah on something that's not an obligation? Yes, absolutely. That's next week. What happens if you're a widow alone on a Friday night or a yontif for kiddush? Yeah, that's next week as well. But it's Rav Hashem. So you see, this topic, even though it's quite dense and technical, generates an enormous amount of interest on the group as well. And therefore, many of those questions, if I didn't understand any, please speak to me privately, and I'll be happy to address them more. But many of these questions we will address next week. Next week in part three, in the final part on this, which will take us right up into Rosh Hashanah, we will look very specifically about what options are available for women, for men, on Rosh Hashanah, when there's maybe no shul, whether men can blow for women, who makes the bracha, women can blow for women can blow for men, how that works, compare it with other mitzvahs, can women make kiddush for men, can women make havdalah for men, okay, and see how they all fit together, and hopefully that will round off the topic and give us a fairly broad understanding of this very relevant and quite complicated issue. And then in 2 weeks from now, I want to talk about tshuva, which I think will be appropriate between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But for now, thank you very, very much. I'm sorry I went a minute or two over. Really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you again to the sponsors for all their sponsorship. It should be an aliyah for the neshamas of those in whose names it was sponsored, and a mazel tov again to Donna and Stanley. And please God, I'll see you next week. That is Rav Hashem.
Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful week, and be well.
Yes, sir.
Go. Thank you.